Well, welcome to the Duffin Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch. Today we discuss the Optus Stadium surface. Is it too hard? A fiery Duff lets loose on the AFL Victorian Centric grand final deal. And is the bump back?
That was out of bounds!
I don't believe it! I see it, but I don't believe it!
Dennis, where are you? I need you right now!
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant.
Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... Oh, that's what it is.
The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duffin Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
So welcome, listeners. It's Tuesday morning. It's time for the Duffin Quarters podcast, the first edition of this week. Glenn Quatermain, the sports editor of the Sunday Times, with me in the studio. I'm Mark Duffield, the senior football writer at the West Australian newspaper. And Quarters,
Duff,
hot off the presses, or hot off another radio's airwaves, Adam Simpson not happy with the Optus Stadium surface after another of his young players, Daniel Venables, has been ruled out with a serious ankle injury for up to 3 months.
Yes, well, this is something that's been bubbling away for a while now. Even in the pre-season, there were players complaining about the hardness of the surface. Now, I know you have your theories on it. I believe that over the course of the structure, construction of the stadium, the compacting of the earth probably had a big impact on this. I think it'll get better in time, but it is very hard. They've aerated it. They've treated it. I'm not sure what more they can do right now, but it is an issue. And they need to do what they can. Perhaps they should have a Woodstock-style festival there, Duff, and have some mudsliding and some free love in the off-season this year and try and get it a bit softer.
What they've tended to do at other grounds quarters, and this is what they certainly did at Domain Stadium or Subiaco Oval when there was an injury spate there, is that they over-sowed it with rye grass over the top, and that becomes a winter cover and it acts like a bit of a cushion. What we're seeing with a lot of the injuries that are being incurred at Optus Stadium is that they're injuries that result because, well, could possibly have resulted because there's no give in the ground, and basically a player is having a leg or an ankle or something like that jammed into the ground, there's no give in the ground, and there is an injury that occurs as a result of that. It's a shame for Venables because Venables, I thought every time he stepped out onto the field this year for West Coast, he has shown us something more than he showed the week before. So I got the feeling he was settling in very nicely to that lineup, and it's a shame that he's going to miss, you know, 2 or 3 months. And, of course, that's a similar injury to Liam Ryan or a similar absence to Liam Ryan. And then, of course, there's also Cam Guthrie from Geelong who suffered a similar thing. Brad Hill did a knee, although Brad Hill's knee looked a little bit different. He hopefully will be back this week for Fremantle. And I think Nekiah Cockatoo did a PCL, a minor PCL at the ground as well. Now, some of those, not all of those, can be attributed to the surface. And obviously what will happen is the AFL will do tests on the hardness of the surface. And if it falls between a certain amount of parameters...
So this is the penetrometer reading.
But I think you and I both agree, you've played on it.
I have played on it, yes, with the elites, yes.
Albeit Fossils Rugby. and I've walked on it for a couple of times when we've been there for press conference. I think we've both been a little bit taken aback with the lack of give in the ground.
I've been concerned by when Liam Ryan, I was, as much as you love to see him go for his marks, I've been concerned with players. If they're coming from 2 metres onto that surface, there's going to be injuries. Now, there may be anyway, but certainly a lot of the other grounds, there is give. There just doesn't seem to be any here.
No.
I'm not sure. It's 3/4 rye, 1/4 artificial, this grass. So I'm not sure if you can come over the top with more rye. I'm not sure whether that's possible. I'm not a curator, but...
It looks. We were told that it was going to be quite similar to Subiaco, and it just looks different, doesn't it?
Yep.
It looks more like a cricket outfield than a football.
It does look like a cricket. It's fast and furious. Which is great for footy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a concern. It will be a concern for visiting teams, and maybe we might see a few of the guns rested as they come over, particularly if West Coast and Freo's form at home continues. They might consider resting players a la Pav at 88 Stadium during the latter stages of his career.
Yeah, well, yeah, Pav, Luke McFarlane, they barely played at Etihad towards the end because they knew it was a hard surface. They wondered whether they would pull up okay with that and the travel. So that's a possibility. We don't want to see it get to that.
No, but if you're a a top four, top six side, and you've got one of your key players, and you're heading into finals, and he's just a little bit sore, I'm just think you'd think twice about it, I reckon.
I think the bottom line here is that the thing with Etihad Stadium is that the surface isn't fixable. And it's not fixable because there's a car park underneath it. Mm-hmm. So they can't actually get enough topsoil over the top of it to have the surface the right softness, because if they did, everything would collapse down onto the car park. There's a car park around underneath Optus Stadium, but there's nothing underneath the playing surface. There is no reason why they can't fix this.
Yep.
Even if it means digging out 2 feet of the topsoil and replacing it and putting a whole new surface down, it can be done. And I think unless it softens up dramatically in the coming weeks, I think they're going to have to consider that, A, we have got this wrong, and B, we need to do something about it.
It's a pity because, you know, even with the signage as well, there have been a few issues associated with Optus. It's a pity because it's a damn good stadium.
It's a fantastic stadium, and I think we should not lose sight of that in amongst all these teething problems. But also, it's going to become more and more of a problem if there's a player going down every week with a 3-month injury that can even be in part.
Well, we've got two of them already, haven't we, possibly? Venables, they're talking a couple of months.
Well, I think you could argue three. Venables, yep. Ryan and Guthrie.
Yep, yep.
I think you could all argue could be attributed to, at least in part, to the Optus Stadium.
A couple of other issues over the weekend. Is the bump back? Interesting call, Ree Lacroix. I was concerned for him. When I saw it on Saturday, I wasn't so concerned, but as I saw more and more of the footage. But look, I'm pleased that it was incidental head clash. So I don't think the actual hip and shoulder, there was a clash of heads with that, but it was incidental after that moment. So he probably does deserve to get off as long as he pursues this path throughout the season, Michael Christian. And nothing to suggest he won't. But, you know, if there is incidental contact after the head and shoulders, after the hip, the bump, then as long as he clears all players of that.
Yeah, I think it's a worry. And I think maybe as difficult as this is to enforce, I think they're better off going what I would call the hands in the back route on this one. So basically, if you put your hands in the other player's back in a marking contest, you concede a free kick. Mm-hmm. If the umpire sees you do it,
whatever the force, just hands in the back.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. He sees your hands in the other opponent's back, you concede a free kick. And it's prescriptive, and therefore, to me, if there's contact to the head, I think the best way for the AFL to approach this is just say, contact to the head, your duty of care, you chose to bump, and there was contact to the head. And this is what I argued back in 2014 quarters when Nathan Fyfe got done for, I think it was Riscatelli.
Well, there's not a lot of difference between that and the Lacroix over the weekend, the Lacroix incident.
So. And that was the classic thing, wasn't it? He went to bump. It was a clash of heads. Riscatelli was fine. He just had to go off and get a couple of stitches in his cheek. In this case, Ainsworth has suffered a concussion.
Didn't come back, did he?
No. So I think Lacroix is lucky. The problem for me is they just can't hold the line, and they just can't hold the line, particularly when there's a high-profile case involving a Melbourne-based player. So within a year of the Fyfe incident, and I think what I pretty much wrote about the Fyfe incident is, okay, if this is where the line is, then that's fine.
Yeah, as long as they hold the line,
but make sure you hold the line when it gets difficult. And, of course, Viney smashes Tom Lynch's jaw, and they had to make up reasons to let him off. And similarly, before Fyfe, I think it was Nick Maxwell ran past the ball to break Patrick McGinnity's jaw in a practice match at Domain Stadium, and they found a way to get him off. And the argument they used then was accidental clash of heads. I'm not sorry that Lacroix got off, because Lacroix is a ball player. And at the end of the day, if Lacroix has given someone a concussion, it is probably a genuine accident.
Can you make the same argument about Sandy a week earlier too? You know, I mean, it's a very grey area.
Absolutely.
He's going to have a few headaches this year, Michael Christian, as he now holds the line on that.
But Sandy got done. They just deemed it not sufficient force to warrant a suspension. So he actually was found guilty of an offence. He was just fine.
See, I thought there was more to Sandy's than there was Lacroix's. I thought that there was impact to the head, whereas Lacroix's was incidental afterwards. That was my argument.
Well, the difference is, though, one guy suffered a concussion and took no further part in the game. Jared Lyons got up and had 30 possessions and kicked 2 goals.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the consequences of the act have to be a factor in all this. I mean, to me, I was I thought Sandy might have gotten suspended, but I wouldn't have been more surprised either way with the outcome of that. I didn't see a lot of venom or malice. Well, I didn't see any venom or malice in what McRae did to Ainsworth, but the fact there is a contact to the head and the fact the other player suffers a concussion, if you just apply an across-the-board duty of care rule, and that means even accidents, you know, you make contact with the other player's head and you've chosen to bump rather than contest the ball, then I think you're in trouble.
Just on Sandy, we were speaking last week about whether he should be rested from last week's trip to Canberra. Should he be rested this week? They've got the Derby the following week. He's going to have a hell of a game that week. I'm just not sure whether he shouldn't be rested this week. It's a good opportunity, I think.
No.
Mm-hmm. You think play him while he's fit?
I think he plays two more weeks and then he gets a rest. So I think he plays against the Bulldogs. I think he plays against West Coast in the Derby. And then I think he gets a rest. That's what I would be doing with Aaron. I mean, if you're Fremantle, you've played twice at home and you've won, and you've played twice away and you've lost. For Fremantle to stay in contention, they need to take care of home ground advantage, because that's where they're at the moment as a team, isn't it? They're going to find on the road victories hard to come by, I would argue.
Yeah.
And so take care of your home as much as possible. If you're going to sit your big bloke down, don't make him get on a plane and come home on a plane sore and that sort of thing. So I would argue that round seven is the right time for Sandy to rest. Now, Quarters, this show wouldn't be complete if we didn't make comment about that disgraceful contract the AFL has signed to keep the grand final at the MCG till 2057.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a Victorian. Do you have an opposing view to me on this?
I do.
Okay.
Right now, as we sit, it's the best stadium in Australia. It's where the showcase game should be played. Grand final should stay at the MCG. The length of the contract concerns me. It's a long contract. And perhaps, I don't know who's got the prescience to look 40 years down the track. The length of it worries me. But right now, I see no problem in having a 10, 15-year contract at that stadium.
They already have one.
Yeah, okay. Fair call.
So they already had one that's in place for the next.
If you're asking me, it's where the grand final should be played. Yes, it should be until a better stadium is built.
Okay. Well, I would argue it's not the best stadium anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue that Optus Stadium is a better stadium. But anyway,
it's a newer stadium.
I understand what you're saying in terms of capacity. One's a 60,000.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about capacity. It's a 100,000 capacity stadium.
They have done something they didn't need to do, and they've done it for reasons other than what they declare they've done it for. They have done this to get Etihad Stadium redeveloped, period. That's it. They got money out of the Victorian government to do it. They can argue that they've gotten funding for grassroots and community facilities in Victoria alone. So Victoria is the only beneficiary from this deal.
Yes, it is.
They would argue that they've done that, but that's rubbish too, because I can name you $100 million worth of projects in the last 10 years in Western Australia that were undertaken by governments at various levels, not because there was anything for those governments to gain out of them, just because they needed to be done.
Well, Optus Stadium is a classic case in point.
Well, not Optus Stadium. Forget Optus Stadium. Lathlain Park, Coburn, Rushton Park, Joondalup, Claremont Oval. There's a chance that something of some nature is going to be done at East Fremantle Oval. There's a chance that something of some nature is going to be done at Fremantle Oval. There's a chance that something of some nature is going to be done at Bassendean Oval. All these things get done by governments because this is government's role in the community. The AFL did not have to hand over a further 20 years, and that's what it is. It's a 20-year extension of the exclusive right to the AFL Grand Final. Mm. Now, let me put you a hypothetical to you, okay? There's an economist called Tim Harcourt who did an economic impact study in 2015. He estimated the economic impact of the AFL Grand Final on Melbourne as $125 million a year. Now, if he's accurate, the AFL has just handed Victoria $2.5 billion worth of event for a $225 million stadium upgrade. Now, why wouldn't you wait until 5 years before this contract runs out and say to New South Wales, South Australia, and Western Australia, would you be prepared to bid for an AFL Grand Final? And if you did, what would you be prepared to pay?
I don't dispute that they should wait.
And then go back to the Victorian government and say, it's not that we don't think you should keep this, but this is the market value of this event, and this is what you are going to have to pay to keep it. And then take the money you get from that and spread it throughout football, not just in Victoria.
I have no problem with that, spreading the money you gain from it. I think that's it is a socialist environment as it is in many other ways, the AFL, in terms of the draft and the salary cap and what have you. I have no problems with spreading the wealth. I have no problems with waiting longer to sign these deals. But right now, it's the best stadium for the grand final and is for the foreseeable future in terms of capacity. And it's still a damn good stadium, the MCG.
It's a damn good stadium.
It's not the newest stadium, the most modern, the most up-to-date stadium. But it's one of the world's great stadiums. And it's where the showcase game should be played right now.
It also changes the outcome of premierships. So without the AFL's compromised integrity, Richmond doesn't win the premiership last year.
That's fair.
Richmond would have had...
Certainly, it's a big leg up.
Richmond would have had to go to Geelong in the first week of the finals.
See, I couldn't mount a case for that Geelong-Richmond game being played in Geelong, however.
But Geelong had earned the right to host that final.
They had, but another 40,000 can go to the game.
Doesn't matter. Geelong had earned the right to host that final. So Richmond goes to Geelong, where they haven't beaten the Cats since Noah was a kid. So they would have lost that. Even if they'd have won that, and they'd end up in Adelaide on grand final day, because Adelaide had earned the right to host the grand final. If you're looking at an integrity, earn the right model.
But it isn't that.
Richmond's lost their last two against Adelaide comfortably in Adelaide.
But it isn't that.
So we've just changed the outcome of a premiership.
Well, possibly we're assuming that Richmond hasn't won in Geelong, that Richmond loses in Geelong. Now, the odds are, it's certainly a six-goal head start.
What are the odds of Richmond winning both those games?
Freo did it a few years ago.
No, Freo beat Geelong in Geelong.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yes.
So I'm suggesting Richmond, I wouldn't put, they weren't without a chance to win that game in Geelong last year, the way they were playing.
But if you put if you have to earn home ground advantage.
Yeah, but it's.
If that is
compromised.
Why is
it has been compromised over the years. There have been Eagles who have had to travel interstate. I'm not saying it's not a fair playing field.
So it's a handicap event.
Well, it is if you want to put it that way, yes. But I just think...
Where the Victorians have all the advantage.
Well, there were still 40,000 more people got to see that Richmond-Geelong game.
Well, so what? We had to watch it on TV. We don't care.
Yeah, I think a few others do, though.
What, Victorians?
Who could get there?
Victoria.
Yeah, well, there are two Victorian teams playing.
Yeah, Victorians. It's all about the Victorians. I'll give you George Orwell's, one of the great lines from George Orwell's Animal Farm.
Yes, I know the line.
All animals are equal.
Some are more equal
than others.
Some
are more equal than others. And guess which ones are more equal than others?
Well, you're suggesting the Victorian animals.
The Victorians are more equal than others. And you know which ones were more equal than others in Animal Farm? The pigs.
Oh, that's rough. That's rough. Look, they're all good points. I come back to the same argument, though. I really do, and that's show me a better stadium for the grand final, and then we'll talk about it.
Well, let's talk about it in 30 years' time.
Exactly, 25.
And the other point I'll make here is that New South Wales government is about to sit down and plan a new stadium. Now, that stadium at this stage is going to be predominantly a rectangular stadium. How do you get them to include an oval format in that stadium when you're telling them you're not hosting an AFL grand final for 40 years? Aren't you a better chance if you at least say to them, we will review this after when's this contract run out? Is it 2034 or 2036? It's one of those 2 years. We will review this.
2036, I think.
How do you get Adelaide Oval ever from beyond its 50,000 capacity to 60,000 capacity? You need to build another grandstand up the end. If you told them they were a chance to host an AFL grand final, they would do that. If West Coast and Fremantle outgrow Optus Stadium in 15 years, and they outgrew Subiaco in about that time, how do you get the government to take it from 60,000 to 70,000, which is incidentally, it's designed to do. How do you get them to do it? You have to give them the prospect of hosting an AFL grand final. There's all these facilities outside of Victoria.
It's not just AFL grand finals, though. There are other events you can bid for, i.e. Commonwealth Games, World Athletics Championship.
Well, they've got nothing to do with the AFL, Glenn.
No, I'm not saying they do.
I'm talking about how the AFL runs its business.
Yeah, I'm talking about the stadium and the capacity and the need to grow.
All animals are equal. Some are more equal than others. Let's get to some questions.
Mm-hmm.
Shane Luff, sorry, Bryce Luff is asking, is Fremantle's current spine potentially its most talented? If not, where does it rank?
Most talented in history, potentially. Well, yes, potentially. Right now it's not.
No, it's not. I mean, let's not forget that Matthew Pavlich was
a midfielder for a certain amount of time. Yeah.
Well, but he was an element of Fremantle's spine for the best part of 16 years. And Luke McFarlane was another element of Fremantle's spine for the same amount of time. I reckon you could argue that Alex Pearce is going to be a very good player and maybe the sort of player that would rival Luke McFarlane. I don't see anyone up the other end at the moment
who rivals
what, Matthew Pavlich.
They'd look all right in 2 years if they've got McGovern at one end and Hogan at the other.
Yeah.
At the end of 2 years.
It seems to me that some people in the media are just happy to throw any West Australian out of contract at Fremantle. I mean, give me a spell. There is a pretty fierce rivalry between Fremantle and West Coast. Not many players have moved from Fremantle to West Coast. Or vice versa.
We went through this before. There have been three or four, I reckon.
Yeah. And Jesse Hogan had a chance to sit out of a contract and come home. He chose to re-sign with Melbourne. I would have thought that something would have to go badly wrong over the next 18 months for Jesse Hogan to come home.
Angus Brayshaw out of contract at the end of this year.
Angus Brayshaw is more likely, but if you're going to play Angus Brayshaw in the VFL 3 weeks out of four, you're going to lose risk in him. Mm. My advice to Melbourne would be use him or lose him.
Well, they might this week.
Yes.
They might have to.
So what else have you got for us, Quarters? Now that I've berated you about being a Victorian.
That's all right, mate. I'm a proud Victorian.
You must be very happy with your Hawks.
I was very happy with my Hawks. I'm very concerned with Melbourne, though. 16 of 17 goals Hawthorn kicked. They've got some real issues there. And there's not... I'm not sure. The structure just seems very rigid there. Inability to adapt. And I could say the same about Adelaide, actually. But we've seen this year, everyone seems to have their whack in the spotlight from week to week and they respond. So I'll be really interesting to see how the Ds respond this week. They've got Richmond at the MCG, so it's a big response required for them. Hawthorn-wise, very, you know, look, they're going, things are building well for Hawthorn. A couple of big outs this week, so they'll need to, that'll be, the, and to their structure, Rioli and Pioppolo, I think they're going to be out for a reasonable amount of time. Certainly with that pressure inside 50, that's they're two very big outs for Hawthorn.
Yeah, I agree. Rioli in particular, he just makes things happen, doesn't he? You know what happened on Sunday in that game? Simon Goodwin had his pants pulled down.
Yeah, he did.
Melbourne come out. They come out of the blocks. They look the better team for most of the first quarter. And then Clarko makes the necessary adjustments. And Goodwin doesn't cope. And his players
after about
don't
15
cope.
Minutes when just a little bit of drizzle started to fall. And you know what? That last quarter, their defensive structure was embarrassing.
Yep.
And Hawthorn was just laughing at them. Yep. They need to reference that last quarter in particular. He needs to put that last quarter on the shelf and just drag it out every now and then just to show them how football should not be played.
So I reckon that's a big tick for Hawthorn and Clarkson. And now they're going from a team I had sort of like 9, 10, 11, 12 to a team I'm thinking, I think they're going to make the 8.
Yeah. I still say 6th to 10th is Hawthorn. It's only a month in. Let's just reserve our judgment. But it was. I go back to the week earlier. I thought Hawthorn's effort against Richmond was pretty impressive, only losing by 13 points, and that was the best I've seen Richmond play since last year's final series. So, I thought the week before was just as impressive as a 67-point win, if you can have that. You know, a 13-point loss, but lots to like. And Sicily makes a big difference to that defence when he's there. So let's hope he can keep his head about him.
So. Explain to me Adelaide's effort against Collingwood on Friday night.
Adelaide's effort against Collingwood, well, the first thing I'll say is they do have a lot of players out.
Yep.
There's a lot of players out of that side, and I suspect that Sloane is playing on one leg at the moment as well. Now, it's easy to throw these excuses out, but they are pretty big excuses.
Walker off no preparation.
Well, Walker off no preparation, exactly. So,
Lynch off no preparation.
Mm.
No Crouches. No, bro. I've just answered my own question.
Yeah, but having said that, it doesn't seem to be a plan B with Adelaide. It's this chipping game. There didn't seem to be any response. There didn't seem to be any plan B. That concerns me. I think Don Pike's a fantastic coach, but I think he's got some real issues at the moment to address with him, and they need to be addressed quickly. because it can slip away very fast.
Yep.
You know, and it's at the moment, look, a lot of those Adelaide players, and Jenkins is one of them, Walker's certainly one, there's a response and then they go missing.
So they're not unconditional.
That's right. It's a response which is often driven by the media, and then there's a big response and then there's nothing.
Yep.
And that's the way it's been for Adelaide for a while. Having said that, they did make the grand final last year, but a grand final day was a big exclamation mark, big asterisk next to the team. So yeah.
No, they're all fair calls.
I think that I tell you what we did see on Friday night. Was it Friday night? Yeah, last week. We've talked in recent weeks about Ruckman and
Brody it's Grundy. Been a great
Brody Grundy being compared to Dean Cox now, and there are a lot of elements of his play that were very Dean Cox like. That running goal, brilliant, and he's in some rare form. And look at the benefits they're reaping. Collingwood are every chance now, I reckon. He's got them up and going. They look quicker. And DeGoy really gives them something too. And with Grundy's dominance, I think they're going to be a side that you're not going to look forward to playing in the next short period at least, Collingwood.
Well, they have a powerful midfield, don't they? And that powerful midfield is serviced and accommodated by a very good ruckman.
Yeah. And the question mark's always been their delivery inside 50. Mm. But with Grundy at the moment, they're getting away with that, I think. And DeGoy really gives them something up there. You can see why they've been so patient with him.
DeGoy.
Yeah, he is a bit of a DeGoer.
He's hopefully he keeps himself on the straight and narrow because he's too good a player to waste.
Well, nothing like winning keeps you on the straight and narrow, Duff, and success. It's easy when you're losing. I'm going to have a beer.
Ports has asked a question. Should the VFL-centric parochialism of the AFL really extend to excluding SANFL and WAFL servicemen from the AFL record? So I presume that when they've done their Anzac Day special, there's a heavy... I haven't seen the AFL record yet.
No, I haven't seen it. What, there's no WAFL?
Well, we'll have to have a look at that one over the next couple of days.
I'm not sure if that's the case.
We might comment further when we're better informed.
Yeah, I'd like to be better informed, but I recall in the past the AFL record, certainly over here, has reflected that. And I hope it does, and if it doesn't, then it should.
Yeah.
That's Anzac Day is about Australia as a whole. It's about many things. But
well, so is the AFL, apparently. Allegedly. Okay. Carlton. I wrote my column on Carlton on Monday. I'm going to give the Blues an out at this stage because I just think they've gotten to a point where they're too young.
I agree. I think where they do need to find that balance back. They need to defend more, obviously, and they're going to have to. I still think they're going in the right direction, but they're just a little bit further behind we thought they were. I think that they will click. I think they will be a good side, but I think people have to be patient. It's easier said than done because supporters aren't patient, and they've been patient for a long time, the Carlton supporters.
So if you're Brendan Bolton, though, and we know that if you throw a bunch of kids out there and they're getting hammered like they got hammered in Hobart...
Let's go to plan B.
So, but how do you stop the hemorrhaging and stop the potential psychological damage to the kids?
Well, they either need a spell from it, or you need to go back to find a bit more of a defensive-offensive mix, because the way they're going at the moment, they're just getting smashed offensive. They're being smashed. They're playing a total offensive game, and they need to revert back to more like the last 2 years of their development. And if I think he's just gone too far too soon.
You know what the problem? One of the problems for Carlton is that if you look at their senior players, apart from Murphy, who obviously didn't play
that
on
was,
the weekend.
That was, I mean, then that, let's just add that in there. Three minutes before the bounce, you do your foot.
So all your plans go out the window.
Well, I mean, they're just not easy things to overcome 3 minutes out. I'm sure they would have contingencies for every player being injured during a game, but you don't expect that to happen 3 minutes before the bounce. I mean, that's just a whack in the face before it even starts. It's just unfair.
So apparently Mark Murphy's been suffering from plantar fasciitis, which I can
needs
tell
you, to jump off a chair.
I've had plantar fasciitis. It hurts.
Now, that was Robert Harvey jumped off a chair to snap the muscle.
So what happens if you snap the tendon repairs and the inflammation goes away. So the theory is that plantar fasciitis will stay with you. It can stay with you for a long time. I know it was with me for about 3 months. And it was because I bought a bad pair of joggers back in a previous life when I used to jog, Glenn. And And then eventually it just went away. But what you can do, if you want to shorten the pain, you can do what Robert Harvey did.
Yeah, all his. That's all his.
Jump off the table. I think he jumped off a table. He jumped off a table repeatedly until it snapped, and then you have a week where it repairs, and then you're back playing. Mm. So, yeah, that was a big loss. I just worry. I see the young talent. It is obvious. I mean, Charlie Curnow can clearly play. Sam Petrescu-Seaton can clearly play.
Cripps.
Zach Fisher can clearly play. Paddy Cripps can clearly play. I don't mind Plowman. I don't mind Marchbank down
back. Marchbank and Wiedering. Wiedering will come good. You know, there's a lot to like there, and I think it's a long road, but they should stick on it. I want them to stick on it. I want to see what the end product is. I really hope they don't deviate. At the moment, they look like they are sticking fat with it all.
Yep.
I just hope they do, because I'd like to see some reward. And a lot of critics eat their words.
And, of course, no roundup of this week's round would be complete without mentioning the frightening collapse of Dylan Roberton at Geelong on Sunday.
Now, I certainly hope it's a similar outcome to players we've seen in the past. Nathan Eagledon was one who collapsed on field, and it was a heart murmur. In many cases, it's a pretty easy operation, and you're back very soon, and you're fixed. You're healthy again. So let's hope that Dillon, who's a very handy player.
He's been a very good player for St Kilda.
For 2 years now, I reckon he's been in their top five. I think he was runner-up in their best and fairest last year. So I think let's hope it's a quick fix. I think it is from all reports at the moment. And he's back playing. It'll be 2 or 3 weeks, I think, minimum.
Oh, I would think all of that. Yep. If you're dealing with something like this, you want him to rest. You want him to stabilise. You want to run every possible test you can run to make sure this is not going to recur. And then you gradually ramp him up to see how he reacts.
I'm sure they are doing that. But as I said before, it can be a quick fix, and an easy fix, I should say.
Yep.
And hopefully it is for him. We should comment on Josh Kennedy too. He needs 2 goals to pass the great Peter Sumich.
Well, yeah, Peter Sumich was a very good full forward, the first left-footer to kick 100 goals. I think he's one of only about four or five players to have 200 shots at goal in a season.
So you've got to pick your side, only one at full forward. Who are you picking?
Josh Kennedy.
Okay, yeah. Look, I'm picking Sumer. It's a different era, and that's no slight on Josh Kennedy. I think he's a sensational footballer, but a different era. It was arguably more difficult for forwards now.
Yeah.
But Sumer was just... They're both special. Sumer's a little bit more special for my liking.
Sumer was more capable of the miraculous.
Mm.
Josh Kennedy is your old gold, competitive, hard-working,
lock him in for 4 or 5. Just lock him in.
Lock him in for 65 goals a year.
Yeah, you could do that with Sumer too.
Not at the end. So Sumer at his best. Sumer's best football was probably better than Josh's.
Well, let's hope Josh hasn't got to his end yet. Well, Josh is not at the end either. So he's a terrific footballer. And sometimes, you know, we forget.
We do. Sumer was a very good player, very important part of those West Coast Premiership teams in 1992 and 1994, and a very good record in finals too. Quarters?
Yes, he did. He did. I still remember the opening of the 91 GF. I think he kicked 3 and 3.
He kicked a few in the first quarter. Mm. I remember that. Yeah.
Against a pretty good player in Chris Langford too.
Yes, and unfortunately for West Coast fans, we know what happened after halftime in that game.
Well, they got one the next year, mate.
All right, well, I think that's enough for today. We will come back on Thursday. We'll do a preview of the Anzac Day round.
From the middle of the MCG.
From the middle of the MCG.
I'll have the Victorian flag.
We are, as of now, we are all going to the toilet at the MCG. We're not allowed to poo anywhere else because there's an AFL contract in place. It's all about the Vics. We will see you on Thursday, or you will hear us on Thursday. We'll have all the tips for Tab Touch. Going into the Anzac Day round, which I think Quarters will agree with me, is one of the most special rounds of the year.
It is. Good luck.
We'll see you then.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.